To reference later on. So the recording is on right now. So basically, you know, this call, because I provided quite a bit of information for Sue to review, and so she's digested, you know, probably everything, and then some on the subject. So this call is really for her to pick your brain, you know, really just, you know, a bunch of questions for you, and, you know, and then just for you to provide answer. And I'm sure you can, you know, you can do this at any time. So while you're driving in this case. Sue, any question for me before we dive into your questions or any, you know, anything?
No.
You're good? Okay, so you know what, then I'll turn everything over to you, Sue, and, you know, you can begin, please.
Great. Well, hi, everyone. And,
hello.
Thanks so much for taking the time today. I know it's been a challenge to get all of our schedules together, but here we are, so let's go. So stay on the road, Campbell. Don't be messing with our
schedule.
Nope, we can't reschedule, come on. So Peggy gave you a summary or high-level view of what we're doing with this paper. And, you know, some of this information surely, you know, appears here and there elsewhere in the sense that we're working hard to keep all the messaging consistent and so forth. But the difference, as Peggy has explained, is this is a thought leadership piece, so it's not going to read like a solution brief or a data sheet or a technical white paper or anything like that. And we are, in fact, not even mentioning the IBM products in it. That's really a key differentiator, I think, from some of the other deliverables that focus on government that Peggy has been kind enough to forward to me for background. So we won't be mentioning IBM at all. And so the idea is to really show where the opportunities are for government organizations to do things differently, you know, to improve these efficiencies and eliminate these silos, to integrate information, and to much more effectively, more cost-effectively, efficiently, and so forth, manage the, you know, any of the case management type processes. So the tenor is thought leadership. That's the idea, and we are going to use some of these case, you know, several of these case histories or business cases, what have you, though we won't be calling out the organizations, but we'll show them two or three examples of what organizations can do with it and what the outcomes can be. So, and as Peggy described, another difference in this particular piece will be that we're chunking the information into these three areas of government, of advanced case management for government, and that being request and claims processing, social services, and employee onboarding and offboarding, correct, Peggy? Onboarding and offboarding?
Yes.
Right, okay. Great, and so with that, and certainly if there's anything of late, Campbell, you know, as far as new trends in government, emerging trends, if there are any of those flavors we can put in this, that would be great. So please keep that in mind as we talk for any particularly new, say, compliance requirements, you know, for government or anything like that. That would be great because, you know, that would certainly weave into the thought leadership tone of this quite well. So
yes.
I don't know if you want to start, if it makes sense, Campbell, maybe you tell me if we want to start at a high level and you just jump in and to because we're going to be we're putting some quotes in here, too. That's something that'll be a little different. We probably will, I'll say, put, you know, add some thought leadership quotes in here about the market and so forth. So maybe you should start by just government, you know, industry on the whole, and where the opportunity is, some of their challenges, you know, without going into too much detail, because we want to pretty quickly break out into these three areas.
Right. So the first sort of major discussion point that I tend to cover or question a government audience today is about whether they can prove equitable treatment to all case files. You know, if they're challenged, either through e-discovery or through litigation, you know, they have to be able to prove that they provided equitable decision-making and, you know, amount of time associated with the, like, let's say, an eligibility claim or something along those lines. So they have to be able to prove that, and the answer typically today is they can't. And then there's another measure. Can they measure the productivity of the overall program that they're trying to deploy? And typically they can't. They can sometimes measure manually, obviously, the workload of a caseworker or a government employee, but they can't necessarily measure the entire workflow through the process of managing the creation of that case file to the decision making, and then obviously to the, you know, to the records management aspect of it. And can they prove integrity of that case file today? Can they ensure that only individuals who have the right to be able to see that information can see it, and that they are also in compliance with privacy and security requirements within that public sector organization? And then lastly, to the point you are making, is can they prove that they're in compliance with the policies associated with that government program today? And that gets into sort of a side discussion about how governments, one of the trends is the need to align, more tightly align, the underlying processes of how they do their work with the policy divisions within a government organization, so that as policies change, the underlying business process changes, not affecting the workers' application or area that they do their work in at the end of the day. So that's one area that we talk about, is equality or equitable treatment of the case file, productivity of the overall program, integrity of the information associated with the case file, and as well as, you know, ensuring compliance to that information. So basically wrap it up, trying to make those points, is that today, can you go back and sort of measure and identify who made a decision, why they made that decision, when they made that decision, and what policies they based that decision on?
Got it.
And to that end as well, there's another concept that we've been sort of bantering around, just about water cooler decision making, trying to ensure that we're giving the government worker the ability to make the decision in a technical environment versus a physical environment, sort of manual process environment.
Mm-hmm. So what is it? Where are the problems for them? Why can't they do these things that you're talking about that they really need to be able to do? What is lacking in their systems, in their processes, in how they're running their organizations that is...
Well, I mean, today you've got, well, the generic one is we have siloed operations.
Right.
We have manual processes today. We have ineffectual technology applications that don't allow a worker to feel confident in either making the decision in the application and or, you know, in the ability to incorporate, you know, instant messaging or email into the decision-making chain within the boundaries of the application. An extreme example of this is a business value assessment that we did, where you have government employees working in an ERP system, printing screenshots of their work, just to ensure that they're in compliance. So they're printing screenshots of an automated system and keeping that in a file folder. I mean, that's just an example of wasted effort and such. The other thing that we identified through, you know, business value assessments is if you look at an end user's cubicle in a government organization, they typically will have cheat sheets on how to bypass policy, how to circumnavigate broken processes, how to get their job done on a daily basis, which really then becomes part of how technology is supposed to incorporate not just the technology environment for a worker to do their job, but to manage the underlying business processes, the more tight alignment to the policies and compliance requirements of the government program, so that you have much stronger internal controls and automated internal controls within that government program, which then again has a sidebar to fraud. And fraud is another big trend issue right now in government. Either fraud, abuse, or error usually is associated with poor internal controls. And that's where people take advantage of, like, supply chain, contract fraud, duplicative claim fraud, you know, there's various forms of it. If there's weak internal controls, like manual processes, broken processes, ineffectual policy enforcement, people will take advantage of it, and they will obviously act in a fraudulent way.
Right. So where does government budget, government funds and so forth come into this? Where are the either resistors there, or what illusions might they have, or misinformation about what it'll take to improve some of these silos of information, these processes? Do they have a picture they just can't afford to do anything that massive because they see it as massive? What are the potential resistors?
The resistor is that it's perceived that it has to be done all at once, whereas from this advanced case management point of view, advanced case management is a strategic direction for an organization to go through. And we could either get into trying to illustrate best practices, but best practices typically focus on an assessment of, and I don't know if this is going to get too down in the weeds for the paper, but a focus on a maturity understanding of where they are from a metadata point of view, like a file plan classification. Where are they from automating their business processes? Where are they in integrating unstructured information associated with their work to transactional or structured data systems? So typically if someone looks at it, they see this huge elephant sitting in the room saying, here's the technology, and there's obviously budget pressure at the national level all the way down to the local government level. So there's an approach that needs to be taken from the point of view of, you know, where do they start first and foremost? And that really comes back to understanding what they have in-house today and then try to focus on where the short to mid to long-term success points would be. And that unfortunately becomes almost like a paper in and of itself. But what I would say is that the need of a technology has to be able to incorporate the structured and the unstructured information with underlying business process management to allow more rapid development of an application where a government agency can prove that because they can more rapidly develop a technology to support the needs of an end user, they get their payback in a shorter period of time. I mean, governments do focus on ROI, they do focus on payback, they do focus on return on the budget that was allocated to that program. So, you know, you have to have technology that incorporates more capabilities along, you know, instant messaging, email, forms, business process management, integration to existing systems, that then allows them to more rapidly develop at a lower cost point. I don't know if that, does that address it?
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Peggy, can you clarify the audience to make sure we're all on the same page and have that?
Okay, the audience is, you know what, it can be really anybody, because this white paper most likely is going to be syndicated out there on IBM.com and other websites. So it's going to be people who are interested in, obviously, government, and then in, because our title will have something to do with case management, but, you know, hopefully we'll come up with a very creative title that's more enticing. So it's going to be pretty much anybody. So.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, sorry. It's not.
That's what I figured.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure if you had any particular campaigns you'd be leveraging it for, or
not specifically, no.
Okay. Great. All right, so all good, Campbell. This is great. Dan, if we can take a bit of a dive into each of these areas and talk specifically about their challenges in these particular areas and with these three, particular processes or program areas, and where the opportunities are to do things differently around case management. So well, let's start with request and claims processing.
Okay.
And the type. So can we define that first to make sure I understand exactly what we're talking about here?
Request and Claims Processing. Sorry, which organization is this from? I don't have it in front of me. So.
I have it. It's California Department of Industry Relations. So they have a claims adjudication use case, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. They're using, streamline and speed responses to request under the Freedom of Information Act.
Right. Okay. So what you can theoretically just think of it as this is a claim request or an eligibility request or a request for Freedom of Information access into NRC. All of those are processes that first and foremost have probably a limited time frame in order to affect a decision on that request. So either, individuals will be filling in physical forms, electronic forms, or it may come in via email if it's a Freedom of Information request. So typically you've got an event that occurs that this organization has to respond to. And typically what they try to do is they try to automate as much of the data capture and the decision-making through what's called straight-through processing. Typically in private sector, that's, an insurance claim, that's, a mortgage, application. Typically, they try to automate that through their systems, primarily structured data or transactional systems, for straight-through processing. Well, what ends up happening is that you typically will then have an exception that needs to be dealt with. Either the claim, the request, is outside of the bounds of the formal straight-through processing transactions, either it exceeds tolerance levels for certain claims, if it's trying to claim too much, if it's claiming too little. If there's other exceptions within that claim, then it gets flagged and it becomes an exception. And what you want to be able to do is coordinate a lot of the unstructured information and the decision-making processes around that exception to closure as quickly as possible and also document it. So in that electronic case folder, you give that electronic case folder intelligence to know what is inside it, where it's supposed to go, who it's supposed to see, and when a decision has to be made on it, and then when to put up its hand and say, hey, nobody's looking at me, or hey, it's taking too long. That's an oversimplified example. Freedom of information is, again, a limited time frame. So if a request comes in to the NRC that they want freedom of information on a specific nuclear plant, how it's managed, what of its security certifications have been over the past 6 to 8 years, then that request comes in and has to be dealt with almost like not a complaint, but a correspondence management system that, we have a request, now we've got to delegate it to specific individuals or teams within the NRC, and then we need to then document, manage, control, and get that information back to the individual requesting to that information within legislated set amount of times. I don't know if sometimes it's 15 days, it can be 30 days, it can be 90 days. But it has to be measured, it has to be quantified, it has to be managed so that if an individual goes on holiday and it sits on their desk in a manual process, then they can be out of bounds of compliance and therefore they can be at risk. Mm-hmm. But what you're trying to do is focus on technology that provides the capability to give that file folder of that request the intelligence to know how to go through the NRC organization to get to resolution, to gather the data and information from maybe multiple groups and organizations through delegation, and then roll it back up again.
Can you give a couple more examples of the types of events you're talking about? I mean, there's this one with the NRC and Freedom of Information and these deadline-driven activities and so forth. Can you name a few other examples of why, what types of requests?
Well, you could do one for in a Department of Transportation. Complaints coming in about, that's too close to the bone, because actually we're just about to sign a deal with DOT on that one. But to give you an example of that, so DOT only has about 6 to 7 people within the complaints department. When the Toyota accelerator pedal issue hit the market, they were inundated with complaints, requests for information, updates, correspondence, communiques, all of these different forms of content and information that had to be sent back out to each individual requesting it had to be responded to within a certain amount of time. And I think, as you can imagine, they probably started to fail on that because it's manually based today. It was run by Excel spreadsheets. There was no way to coordinate people. There was no way to coordinate all of the data and information that they had to repurpose it or republish it into the format that was being requested. That's another example. Asset management, within a State Department of Transportation, they have to do work orders on specific, segments of linear assets that they have. So on a certain segment of road, they've obviously got X amount of fire hydrants, they've got X amount of hydropoles, they've got, the surface of the road itself, there's painting, there's potentially other, there's snow removal, there's all these other things that are associated with that segment. And so a work order generates a vast amount of potentially unstructured information associated with it. There's contracts, there's forms, there's communication, those sort of things. Another example, I think, with, again, sticking to Department of Transportation, North Dakota Department of Transportation has a mudslide application. So potentially not limited on a time frame, but they're collecting all of the unstructured information, the engineering diagrams, weather forecasts, geospatial data, and associating it with a linear segment of highway on North Dakota for its susceptibility to be hit by a mudslide. So they sort of manage that. Again, that's in a longer time frame. Like that's, looking at something on a yearly basis or every five-year basis versus a request for information that has to be done within 15 days. I'm trying to think of some other examples. Obviously, when there's e-discovery. So if a state controller's office is taken to court because they canceled a large contract, construction contract, or some contract with a vendor, they go into litigation, and then they have to build their case. They have to go back and reach back and access emails, forms, contracts, documents, procedural documentation, everything. They have to interview people. All of that has to be collected and managed and brought to court at a specific point in time. The judge says, you have a year to build your case. So now they've got to go back in, they've got to go back into backup tapes, they've got to go back into CDs and DVD backups, they've got to go back into archive systems, they have to go back into physical documents to be able to pull all of that information up for an e-discovery exercise within a government organization. Is that helping?
Oh, absolutely. That's exactly what we need. We need it to be, as specific as we can be to really speak to these different...
Right, and another example that a state Department of Justice, who I can't name, but they had to throw out 20,000 legal cases out of the system because they couldn't serve justice on a timely basis, which meant that through that complex court environment with lawyers, judges, the district attorney, the prosecutors, the defense, they couldn't collect the dockets and the court documentation and format it and bring it to in front of the judge on a timely basis. Thereby, the judge basically said, we have to throw this thing out because you haven't served justice on a timely basis. That's an extreme example of it. I'm just trying to think of some other examples of that.
Good. I think that'll be good. So then you touched on the capabilities that will help them, but if you could talk a little more about the capabilities that will help them, what are the capabilities, and what will that do for them in the short term and the long term, and in their ability to serve, the citizens that they support, too?
Okay, well, there's along the lines of what we've been saying at IOD, you've got two areas of best practices, or what I'd say where capabilities line up, sorry. You've got the content management side or the case management side, which is all about, you know, if you have content and information in motion, it's giving value to the government organization. If you have on the other side of the house, so once a case file, a decision has been made, it has to be kept as a record. So that gets into what they call information lifecycle governance. So when you have content and case files and data and information at rest, that's all about risk management. And so I'm going to touch on a couple of different things here. So if I go back to the other side, so around case management, the capabilities that really start to drive the key factors here are obviously a content governance strategy. That's not a capability, that's a strategy. So the organization has to have a robust data governance strategy. They have to have the means to measure and then look to automate the underlying business processes of supporting the entire program, the government program, not specific departments per se. I'm getting offline here. So trying to stick it back to capabilities. What I'd probably say on the capability side from a case management point of view, you're looking at first and foremost being able to integrate unstructured information, so that's forms, documents, PDFs, audio, text, video potentially, geospatial, structured systems like SAP, Oracle, Siebel, CRM systems, all being integrated so that you have a complete information management strategy on approach to that. The core capabilities then get into collaboration, the ability to have email and instant messaging within the case management environment, the ability to utilize Web 2.0 or mashup technology to be able to rapidly deploy and develop these applications to meet the needs of the end users. Because that's one of the fundamental drivers, is that the capabilities have to meet the needs of the end user at the end of the day. Another key factor is content analytics. Content analytics allows you to not only measure the performance of the caseworkers, measure the productivity of the program and the system and the applications, it also allows you to analyze all of the unstructured information for trends, patterns, and behaviors. So think of being able to go back in and analyze all of the unstructured text associated with a case file or multiple case files over a year, 3 years, 5 years, to be able to analyze that information to potentially identify trends, patterns, and behaviors that you probably wouldn't have seen in the past. So content analytics is key. Another key capability is interoperability, but what we're trying to emphasize is the need for that case management approach to be able to integrate to existing investments that organization may have already had or made, whether that's ERP systems, databases, whether it's other content repositories, whether it's shared file systems. They have to have a strong interoperability capability to be able to leverage what they have in-house already, but then utilize the case management approach to really bring the value to the overall program itself. Be able to raise all of that information up into an application so that end users really can leverage the developed environment for their decision-making capability. I'm not sure, Brian, if you're on the call, am I missing any core capabilities on the ACM side?
You got the analytics, you got the collaboration, rules.
Thanks, Brian. So you have to have advanced rules management. So what happens if this scenario were to be put into place? That has to be managed effectively with an advanced rules capability. And that's, so you want advanced rules, you want collaboration, you want interoperability, you want content analytics, and
The rules addresses So the rules address is what Campbell was saying when, you know, you go in someone's cubicle and you see them have cheat sheets. I mean, that's essentially a rule. You know, they're saying, if this happens, I need to do this, and it's like a reminder. And so these advanced rules that Campbell mentioned, it's automating that for them.
Yeah, and I think, lastly, the other capability is what I guess we call, you know, the social content management side, the ability to prevent the data, the information, the unstructured information, the collaboration into a format that the government worker will use. Because, again, the key factor here is end-user adoption and end-user buy-in. And so the user interface, the application, whether they work with a shared file system, whether they work with Outlook, whether they work with Lotus applications, whether they work with a desktop or web browser or a mobile device or an iPad, the application has to present it into the format that they're able to be able to use.
Got it.
As an example of that, in the German Department of Justice, the judges have iPads, so they take the cases home with them at night, and what they're looking for is, you know, fact, argument, and then they make the decision on what sort of where it goes, which fact against the argument wins the sort of that area within the case. What they basically with their finger just highlight in their own color, like the judge may be yellow and the defense and the, you know, other lawyer may be different colors, but even taking it down to that level of presentation to an individual so that they can more easily get their job done. All of the complexity of those capabilities is coordinated with this approach of, you know, more robust or dynamic case management, you know, not flagging IBM products per se, but that's really what we're trying to get to is, you know, the power of the application makes it so much easier for the end user to get their job done.
Got it. Okay, so let's jump over to social services, and then we'll end with employee onboarding and offboarding. So what can you say specifically about social services organizations and where their particular challenges and limitations are around how they're doing their running their processes?
Well, I mean, Peggy, is this intended for a worldwide audience or primarily North American?
You know, primarily North America, because we always run into the problem of translation, you know, with international.
Mm-hmm.
So primarily for North America. Brian, I mean, I know we want to do worldwide, but it's very difficult.
Yeah, ideally worldwide. Why do you ask, Campbell?
Well, no, it's just because social services in North America is really about Medicare reform and then providing an integrated approach to it, whereas the United States is unique, its healthcare system versus anywhere else in the world. So, I mean, what I would say from a social services point of view is that you need, we're probably going to extend here into another capability that we integrate to, but we don't provide ourselves. Social services primarily comes back to have a single view of a citizen. So regardless of, you know, who they are, how many aliases they may have in the system, you need to have a single record of truth about that person. And we've been doing work with the City of New York, Health and Human Services, where one of the challenges is you have a homeless person. That homeless person doesn't have a fixed address, but they have relationships potentially within a neighborhood that sort of triangulates them to a specific potential area that they tend to reside in. That was one of the challenges, that you need to have an individual, you have the single record of an individual, you have to have an ability to map relationships and then coordinate all of the related information and case files around that individual. So that individual, well, an extreme example, a homeless individual may have a police case file, they may obviously have a social case file, they may have a drug rehabilitation case file, they may have multiple case files from multiple organizations within a large city or a large, you know, social service provider. Those have to be coordinated so that you are looking at a single record of the truth first and foremost, so the case file understands who they represent, and then the coordination of case files across multiple divisions and areas that, you know, that builds a high degree of complexity. So the challenges are, it's the coordination of the underlying business processes associated with it, with the key individuals who would see that person on a daily basis in social services, and then repurposing the information and the content into the format for that caseworker. So you have multiple caseworkers within multiple divisions dealing with one individual. So it's a very complex environment. So what we're seeing is that we're seeing componentized models being looked upon. So you may have a componentized model for eligibility for social services within this city, or caseworker field interviews with this individual to ensure that they're tracking on their medication and things such as that. So it's really about social service case coordination is really the fundamental that we're looking at here. And then obviously the ability to leverage content analytics can really drive this even further, because if you can start to do linkages between multiple individuals, you could potentially identify a harmful situation that would be ongoing. I mean, social services is big, and the enterprise reference models associated with social services are very large and complex, but mm-hmm. from a case point of view, we're really talking about the case coordination of a government worker making a decision, or multiple government workers making a decision on either someone's eligibility, someone, you know, their long-term tracking and coordination, those sort of things. DWP, Department of Workers Pensions in the United Kingdom, you know, is now an automated system where all of the case documentation for an individual is represented in an electronic form to a caseworker so that they can more easily make decisions on that individual's eligibility and continuing eligibility for social assistance. As I said, the City of New York, HHS, has got some documentation around it. What I would say to that is that one of the core capabilities required is that if you have a case management environment, it's only as good as the master data or the single view of the citizens that you have within the system. So it's only as good as the data and information or records that you have within your system.
Right.
I was getting a bit verbose there. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So you mentioned an example a few minutes ago about the coordinating cases. You have all these different divisions and multiple people at different divisions and all working on, a single case, and that they might be lacking the visibility that would actually help them provide the best service is what it seems like you were suggesting, and or the integrated information and the coordinated processes and so forth. Can you give two or three specific examples, you know, beyond that, of how when they lack the processes, they lack the coordination, the integration, some real examples of what processes that can slow down, or how that could, you know, potentially, you know, we want to be careful, of course, not to speak badly of the government and how they're doing their jobs, but just a couple examples of particular processes, particular organizations, and, you know, where the opportunities are. How people are being impacted in their organizations, specific processes.
Right.
And outcomes for the citizens.
Right. Okay. We may need to get you another document. There's one that was put together for DWP,
mm-hmm.
Department of Workers and Pensions. That is in a PDF format that we need to get to you.
That'd be great.
Another one that's extremely well understood is in social services is fraud. Again, fraud investigation, being able to track and, you know, investigate, you know, duplicative claims or erroneous claims. And I'm trying to think of some an example where we can pull on that. We have a process flow for fraud investigation that we can provide you, but it's not specific to any organization. I don't know how well documented the Spanish social service.
That's published. Castile y León.
Yes.
Yeah, that's published, Campbell. So we could share that with Sue.
Yeah. I mean, I know that we're doing some work at Centrelink in Australia around their social service. We've got some information on the U.S. Social Service Agency itself, but unfortunately it's IBM, older IBM technology, but we basically automated their case management system so that they can do high-speed scanning of all of the physical documentation associated with case files and then repurpose that data and information back to the caseworkers. I mean, that's a huge one. They were saying that they estimate, you know, $1.2 billion savings annually. They've got obviously highly geographically dispersed offices. They've got a large population of users. I don't know whether we can still use SSA, but that's the one that comes to mind. I mean, the big ones are DWP, SSA. Then there's a smaller one in Spain. I'm just trying to think of the other ones. There's one in France. But again, some of this information is pretty brief. I mean, it's like, you know, what was the problem? What was the solution? And what are the benefits? Pardon me. But I mean, those we can try to pull up for you.
Okay.
Because probably these wins, the win documents, illustrate, you know, where they're going, mm-hmm. but you know, I'm not sure if they've developed it yet or it's fully deployed. So we need to be able to provide you sort of interim examples of where, you know, this helps. But I think we need to get a bit more information on social services for you.
Right. Okay.
So there's the City of New York, mm-hmm. HHS Connect. There's mm-hmm. SSA. At the federal level, there's DWP in the United Kingdom. There's the Spanish Castilla y León social service one, and there's another one I can't place right now. But I think what we need to do is get you those at least one sheet or one pager on them.
Okay, great. Yeah, that'll be good. And is there information on results? On how the capabilities are helping them?
I think the DWP one, the PDF document, I think articulates some benefits that are being realized. I think that the SSA one articulates some benefits that they're forecasting to realize. I'm not too sure about the Spanish one. And HHS Connect, he's presented now at least 2 to 3 times at IOD, so we should be able to pull from that material, I would think.
Okay, great, because I can use you know, some of that information for the you know, the benefits portion, the kinds of results that advanced case management can provide these social services organizations.
Peggy, we can also give you the business value assessment we did of one organization, but it would have to be blinded. You just have to say that, you know, a department of finance was starting to realize these unproductive aspects of their caseworkers and look to, you know, how ECM could, you know, help provide savings. I mean, there's some of that, because that's the example that I used at the beginning, where they were printing screenshots of an automated system, where they were wasting, I think, 62 minutes a day, each individual touching paper in an unproductive fashion.
Which BVA is that Campbell Inn?
It's Province of Nova Scotia. You'd have to ask me to send it to you.
Okay, or can I go to Holly? Polly?
She probably will not give it to you, but I have the executive summary document. But
Perfect.
Again, we'd have to present it with the caveat that it would be blinded.
Okay.
Got it.
Okay, got it. I will. I'll follow up with an email.
Thanks. Yeah, that's true for all of these, right, Peggy, that we're not going to be naming.
Yeah, no, we can't.
Yeah.
Unless it's, I think the only one we can name is that Spanish one because they are published.
Is which one?
The Spanish one.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, great. All right, well, we're approaching the top of the hour, and we need to jump over, I think, to employee onboarding and offboarding. So, challenges out there. What types of organizations, if we can, I suppose that's true with any of them, what types of challenges are they having and why that ultimately advanced case management can resolve?
Right. There's one that we can probably look into that is not actually advanced case management, but if it's blinded, it'd be a great example. So one of our partners, EIM, did an HR onboarding application for U.S. Army civilian. And it was taking the Army, I think, 9 to 12 months to onboard a new employee onto the civilian side because of all the forms and decisions that have to be made on the hiring process and then obviously allocation of resourcing, finance, and all of those sort of things. So really it is the onboarding of an individual, even though they may have an HRMS system, can be typically arduous because post 9/11, there's a higher degree of sensitivity associated with ensuring that you've vetted a person's qualifications, credentials, that you have gotten the proper documentation from a compliance, potentially non-competitive, ethical, all of those aspects all have to be investigated. There's a higher degree of investigation and vetting that has to occur in today's world than would have happened back prior to 9/11. And in so doing, that creates a lot of forms and decision points, which probably today are either some automated and then some are manual processes. So the Army is one example. I guess I need to try to find if we have that documented anywhere. But typically, governments, and then governments have an issue at the back end that they've got retiring individuals that are trying to get out. So how do you gather as much knowledge from them as possible? How do you ensure that they are, vetted through certain compliance requirements that once they leave, that they're obviously not going to disclose information that they may, have become privy to? I think the other sort of an interesting anecdote is that there was a study from the University of McGill, and I can't remember what, I think it came out a couple of years ago, that showed that for every type A personality senior government employee retiring, it takes 2 to 3 college graduates to backfill that individual. So you sort of theoretically have, 2 to 3 potentially individuals that you're trying to on-ramp to backfill a position of one individual, and at the same time, you're trying to gather as much knowledge from that individual as possible on, how they got their job done, how they do things, why they were so successful, all of those sort of things, which touches on, with HR, you'd have this whole knowledge management discussion, and knowledge management systems fail when they're not embedded into the underlying process of what they support. So you would need to ensure that your storytelling or your esoteric KM systems are embedded into the underlying business process of the case file of an individual that you're trying to offboard or, let go from the point of view of that. So, we're the primary drivers and issues is that we live in a world that is extremely, in the U.S. anyway, litigation driven. And, from that point of view, there's a higher degree of compliance. There's a higher degree of verification and double verification, sometimes triple verification. There's a need to apply, adhere to obviously ethical behavior, legal behavior, compliance behavior. All of those had to be certified. So there's there's a more complex environment for an individual to be hired into, and then potentially exit as they go forward. And I know you're going to ask me for examples. The only one I can think of is the U.S. Army right now, but I'd have to find out if we have that documented.
Okay.
But they were working with manual forms. That was the big issue. They had to automate it with forms.
Mm-hmm. So it took them 9 to 12 months, and exceptionally long, or is that... Are a lot of organizations dealing with those kinds of processes, onboarding processes?
A lot of organizations are dealing with those same issues. Ideally, what they were supposed to be hiring within a 30-day window.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and you're looking at 9 to 12 months.
I could tell you, my husband just signed up with the Navy as a civilian engineer. I think it took him, after he accepted the offer, weeks to get a start date, and then after that is. And then it's weeks into the future is the start date. And then it took him, at least 6 weeks just to fill out all the paperwork. So,
yep.
Of course, that has security clearance because he has high security. So I guess it spans from the Army at least to the Navy to limited cases.
Yep.
So the benefits then to government organizations of bringing on these advanced case management capabilities, and in particularly in this case, the employee onboarding and offboarding support. So obviously, it sounds like the number one benefit is accelerating the processes and being able to better serve. Well, you were just given an example, Peggy, of civilians or whomever to better serve their needs and be more responsive. Are there any metrics, any numbers around the kinds of how much these processes can be accelerated? I know it's unique, but if we can include any metrics potentially or dollars saved, what about from a cost perspective as far as internal resources and processes and staff productivity and that kind of thing? If these processes are manual for a lot of these organizations, then there's such a there's such cost associated with that. So
I've got there's one deck I can send you that's got some snippets of things
I'll
like that
snippets.
As well.
I'll take snippets. Yeah.
I mean, another one that we could probably do a stretch from is the Miami-Dade traffic ticketing system, where they automated it right to the judge's sort of desktop, and we have specific metrics about before and after. There's a ROI study for the Belgian Ministry of Finance, where they showed, I think, 732%
mm-hmm.
increase in claims processing. Mm-hmm. So we do have these documented. We just did one with Hennepin County that we should be able to get some form of documentation on. I know that the city of Helsinki is documenting a success story around a case management deployment, but I'm trying to get that information from a third party in the UK. I'll try to dig up as many numbers for you as possible.
Yeah, that'll be great. That would be good. Oh, metrics are good.
Yeah.
Always compelling stuff. Okay. Well, I know we're at the top of the hour. And this is so good. This is so great. We have lots of information, I think, to work with here. And if I identify any holes, I'll just query you guys in the draft. But Peggy, do you have anything else? Any other thoughts about what information we need?
No, Yeah,
we have a lot to work with, right. And this additional source material that we've identified that you guys can send my way.
Yep, and I try to take good, you know, I don't know about good notes, but I did take some notes about, you know, all the various PDFs and PowerPoints and whatnot. So,
right.
I'll do my best to summarize, Campbell. I know you probably have most of it in your hard drive, but whatever you don't have, maybe I can query Kathleen and Swati and Diane Jolly and, you know, whoever I can find. Because I know Miami-Dade's been around, quote-unquote, forever, so I might even have a deck that's old.
Yeah, no, I have a, it's if you search under Spirit, that was the application that it was called, and that was probably the most full deck, but I have that, and I apologize. I've got to get on another call here at 6.
Got it.
With John Olszewski. But no, I mean, this has been great. I mean, and yeah, if you have any questions, if there are any holes, if there's anything you need to get more tangible on, then please let me know, and I'll try to get that information.
Great.
To you.
This has been just fantastic. Thank you so much, Campbell.
Thank you, Campbell, for your time.
Thanks, Peggy. Thanks,
thank
Brian.
You.
And,
hey,
thanks so much.
Thank you.
Sue,
hey, Peggy, I have the hennepin.